coming out of that, countries in Asia, such as China and Vietnam, North Korea, what was the attraction of sort of a Asian version of communism?
Well, I think, of course, before the war, the European colonial powers had been very involved, as had Japan, and Japan, of course, had been tried to be dominant during the war. So after the war, really, I think most countries in Asia were left with despondency that colonialism obviously didn't work for them, that those powers had been defeated. The answer of Japanese hadn't worked for them, although there had been some collaboration. So they really wanted to find their own way. And I think, you know, communism at that time offered an idea of self-reliant nationalism, a third way between domination by another country through colonialism or through war.
Ironically, this led to the establishment of a number of family legacies, and it's really amazing. I mean, the Nehru Gandhi family, the Bhuttos, of course, the Kim family, there have been so many. I mean, that's such a sort of somewhat of a, I think, you know, kind of contradiction in terms, in a way.
Well, I think that many of the people who had been involved in really collaborating with the Japanese during the war really were either killed or completely finished politically. They weren't taken seriously afterwards. What came was the people who were able to be seen as people who had won the war, which even though he was defeated by the communists, Chiang Kai-shek was in China, even when he went to Taiwan afterwards, or people who had led partisan efforts against the Japanese. So, yeah, you're quite right, that people from very varying backgrounds, such as Sukarno in the Dutch East Indies, that immediately in 1945 he declared was Indonesia and not part of the Dutch Empire anymore. Kim Il-sung, of course, in North Korea, through to his son Kim Jong-il, through now to Kim Jong-un. Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan, of course, that moved on to Chiang Ching-kuo, his son. And now, of course, you could also argue that we've seen that in Singapore with the Lee family, and also now, of course, with Aung San, who was really the father of modern Burma just after the war, and now with the new junta-free and reforming Burma with Aung San Suu Kyi, his daughter.
Well, looking at the lingering ghosts in China, to this day, I mean, there's Mao's portrait in Tiananmen Square, the mausoleum to him, his picture is on the currency, and yet again, officially, you know, the country remains communist and still keeps him as this figure over, sort of overlooking the country.
Yes, I mean, I think it does, and I think it, of course, this is part of that post-war nationalism and national self-reliance that had to be so strong. But and that is also true if you go to North Korea, and of course, if you go to Vietnam, you will see Ho Chi Minh everywhere. If you go to North Korea, you will see Kim Il-sung everywhere. And this also happens with founding nation states in Malaysia, in Indonesia, and of course in India with Gandhi and so on, right across the continent. But what it also means is that often change cannot come until that person has passed on. And certainly that was the case in China. You know, Mao had to really pass his sell-by date and really had to die before Deng could do anything. And I think that's also true of Sukarno in Indonesia. It's also true of Gandhi in India, even, of course, even though he was very revered. That those initial leaders have to go, but they can still remain revered in portraits, and as you say, on Tiananmen Square or on the money or big portraits everywhere. But they have to pass so that then the next generation can take it on from the National Liberation Movement. Where that doesn't happen, of course, you then end up with terrible stasis, which is what you have, of course, in North Korea, where there has never really been a move away from the central commanding family.
Are these ghosts ever able to be exorcised in a way? When you look at what's going on now with disputes in the South China Sea, and even North Korea announced that it's changing its time because it's a legacy of the Japanese, you know, past. Can Asia ever be rid of some of these ghosts?
Look, Sarah, ghosts can be exorcised if you choose not to believe in them. Right? The moment you choose not to believe in them, they're gone. But of course, governments, particularly in China and North Korea, cling quite a lot to that period and to what they feel were the injustices of that period, real and imagined. You know, if you can keep arguing, if you're the North Korean government, that your lockdown, your clampdown on society is because you saved the country from Japanese domination, and hence, if you don't keep on doing that, then South Korea, backed by America, backed by Japan, they'll all try and invade you. And again, for the Communist Party in China, which really argues in part that its legitimacy extends from the end of the Second World War and the immediate aftermath of the Second World War, this idea that you have to keep the fires bubbling away with Japan in the South China Sea, talking all the time about whether a sufficient apology has been given or not. This is all about maintaining regimes that exist at the moment by using these historical ghosts. The moment they choose not to believe in those ghosts, as many countries in Asia have and don't get so worked up about, so they just disappear.
Thanks very much, Paul, for speaking with me today.
Thank